But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crown queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The worldwide web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome back to The Advice Show. This week we're joined by Mike Ainbury, Retirement Savings Director at Standard Life. Mike, welcome back and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Julian. Pleasure to be here
with
you.
Covering one topic this week, which was the big story, the Pensions Commission coming back with their interim report. What were your sort of macro thoughts on that 2 days on from it being published?
It's a very good report, very detailed, lots of statistics in there. Does it really dial anything forward? Does it say anything that we didn't know as an expert audience? I'd probably say there's a few findings, but much of what's found in there reassures the experts in the industry, like your good self, that we knew a lot of the topics here. So the question is what's the next phase? What can be done? And so we're eagerly awaiting spring 2027 with the outright findings.
And in that report, they're going to come back with sort of their conclusions on what they expect to remedy the situation. But this one was sort of more on the problems that they found and that they've identified. What were some of the strong findings that you thought in the report?
Stuff we expected. So adequacy. Are people saving enough for retirement? One. So no, they're not. We've known that. We've known that for a long period of time. We've known for a long period of time automatic enrolment has been largely very good to encouraging individuals to save for their retirement. What things sort of came out that we expect or didn't expect? More about longer working lives. Do people need to work longer to achieve adequacy and a retirement outcome they want? Are they actually saving for outcomes that they understand? Are Pensions UK targets as they intended to be? Buckets, but people are subscribed into those buckets and what those actually look like. I'd say one further thing, it's also about exclusion from self-employed to Muslims, faith-based individuals, and different ends of the scale are not included and not participating and not saving. So what we knew before is true now, but we have more definitive stats.
Standard Life recently launched its Sharia fund. Can you tell me a little bit more about that in the context of...
Absolutely. It's all about not excluding the UK population. A Sharia fund is needed for those of faith to invest appropriately. So really proud and thank you for plugging that launch. I think it's very important to ensure all members of our communities and our customers are included. So this enables that investment that is the Sharia fund.
When it comes to the people not working for long enough, is that the case of just the cost of living getting higher or pension freedoms just meaning people are taking the money out as soon as they can and then not having any money for the last 10 years of their retirement?
It's a really good question. There's broad ends of the scale. So there's the first bit or and areas not covered in the report. So I do wonder whether we will see those entry level jobs. Are people able to find jobs and be automatically enrolled? Depending on their age, and a miss there, we had a miss over the 2017 reforms that have been suggested are in stock and could be taken on board at any particular point in time. So there's exclusions of both the younger age and the latter age of the population there, those in their 60s onwards that are maybe not included and not saving via automatic enrolment. But particularly, there's a finding there of people in their 50s suggesting those people in their 50s may find difficulty in working. So how do they...
After having worked for a length of time before?
It is. And maybe, you know, there's certain areas of industry that when you hit your 50s, you don't necessarily want to leave employment, but you do leave employment. Yeah. So how do you get a meaningful job and continue that for longer? We also see people taking retirement and not having enough money.
Yeah.
1 in 7 not having enough money and needing to go back into work. We also see the social interaction of people in retirement Equally getting bored, just wanted to go back to being in. I know, true on a hot summer, but yes, yeah. People do want to be in work and have a social interaction. But it's really, can people have meaningful and gainful employment through the latter stages of their life? And how does that fit with where state pension age may well be?
The big finding from the report, I think the big takeaway was that it was critical of pension freedoms extensively throughout. What is your view on that? And do you think it was overly critical, or was that a conversation that needs to be had?
So the question of freedoms, did it enable too much choice? And were we prepared as an industry to support that choice and that education? I will add to that, the report also suggested having, similar to annuity policies or retirement collective defined contribution, so CDC, suggesting that there needs to be a measure to soft default individuals into a retirement solution. Any sort of default is difficult in terms of retirement. So whilst I'm praising there should be options given, there are options being given through guided retirement, targeted support, dare I say it, advisors.
Yeah.
that I don't think those will be replaced. There is a definite need for advisors to take on the different propositions and products available to meet maybe a different type of retirement going forward.
How do they do that then? How do advisors lower their cost benefit to allow more customers in?
So there's two different methods, I guess, which is there the ability to do shorter fact finds, limited information, have more data available and process that data. A lot of advisors do that already, trying to use AI for fact finds and otherwise. But you can't replace something that most individuals need at the point in time. A little bit of care, a little bit of interaction, which is guiding people and then changing that where relevant to advice.
It was said in the report that people were taking out money without seeking advice or just withdrawing the money, and that was for the majority. I think like 90% of people were doing that. What are your views on that, and how does the UK answer that issue? Because that's a grave issue for lots of people, isn't it? People aren't...
You're absolutely right. We've debated this before. Some reasons why people start taking pension or just access cash. I think for the last 3 or 4 years, we've speculated, is there going to be a change in tax-free cash?
Don't start the speculation again.
Well, I'm not, but security over what legislation looks like in that future is actually really quite important, in my opinion. Mm. So if we can be really clear that we're not going to tinker with certain elements of tax-free cash or incentivisation on what retirement looks like, That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Secondly, individuals need to take their retirement benefits for different purposes, whether it's ill health, whether they...
From 57,
yes. Or they just can't continue working for whatever reason. So they need access to money. So it could be purely on that actual need for taking benefits.
People taking their pots early. But in the case of not ill health, people taking it, just withdrawing the 300,000 or 400,000 they have saved up and spending that on...
That's the question. Where are they spending it? And are they investing it appropriately? For those individuals that take tax-free cash and stick it in a bank account, I can hear what everyone's thinking there, which is like, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you invest it? What's the... So there is a support mechanism needed, whether it's advice or guidance, to help facilitate consumers that...
Is it not best to remain in the pot then, to remain invested with firms like Standard Life or...
Absolutely. If an individual doesn't know what they want to do with their money and they don't need to take retirement at that point in time, they need to make sure that their investments are aligned and their retirement is aligned. But yeah, it's better to leave it invested appropriately to meet their retirement needs and probably achieve their retirement goals.
So yeah, people withdrawing their money for reasons that they probably shouldn't be withdrawing their money from, but it is their decision, and that was the purpose of pension freedoms. Is there any way that changes now? That's sort of what the report is calling for.
So yeah, I think the report is suggesting that to have a default, to suggest guide people to how to take their benefits rather than just take it out and leave it in the economy or leave it in cash or leave it wherever. So sort of guiding people based upon their pension pot to how to take money. So ultimately, I think the report says a guaranteed income or a lifetime income.
Yeah. And then the report also uses the numbers that are the ages 57 to 87, which is 30-year retirement, sort of, which is the average. How is it impacted by people's life expectancy, which is one of the few statistics in sort of across the Western world, I suppose, where it continues to go up and it hasn't plateaued for 10 years, I don't think.
Yeah, there's two things to consider. Life expectancy, as you say, is increasing. So retirement pots, whether it's state pension or private, is paid for longer. So is that the right thing? There's a question aside this findings, which is how long is state pension payable for? Should it be payable at 67, 68, or should it move like other countries towards 70 or further?
So how do we compare to sort of other European countries like Germany or France?
Generally, we're on par. Some have moved forward. So Denmark has gone to 70. France is lower.
Well, France, Macron's had big issues. That's why he was in massive political trouble last year, wasn't it? Because he tried to move it. But
yeah, big issues and tear gas is what happens if you try and if you try and change a state pension age in France. And my hats are off to the French.
We don't need to get into the French working.
They protest well. they protest well. So any change to state pension age comes at a cost. But equally, that's something that the government have to weigh up. There's a cost there of triple lock. There's a cost there of state pension provision and its income replacement rate, all of which has to be looked at for that term. You also asked about how long people are living for. There's also how long people are living for with happy, healthy lifestyle as well. So if we pick somebody in Blackpool as a male, they may not get to state pension age.
Yeah.
They may not get to state pension age in good health. Whereas I compare to someone across London in Borough of Kensington and Chelsea, way more likely by stats to A, get to state pension age and B, be in better health.
And that seems like it shouldn't be a taboo for people in the industry to talk about that, should it? Because they're just they're the statistics that are laid bare.
There's brilliant statistics out there. A lot of actuarial firms provide those statistics that can be utilised by the industry and in such reports to be able to consider that. So whilst we talk about a disparity in gender, in faith, we should also talk that in geographies, lifestyles, income levels are all interconnected. So it's a very complex solution to what is understandably a personalised.
And while we're on the state pension, then go on, we have to discuss it. The report very much left it alone. The triple lock, the future viability of that. There was one line in the report which did really interest me, which basically said there needs to be a consideration around the continued unfairness to younger taxpayers, which in my mind was a tacit reference to the triple lock.
Totally agree. If I popularise the comment, if that's okay, the state pension system is a pay-as-you-go basis. Why does somebody who's going into work, if they're lucky enough to find work at the current time, and unemployment hovers around 5%, with AI, conservative estimates suggest that unemployment will go much higher. For individuals that are entering the workforce, they may well say, well, why do I want to pay for someone who's in retirement, had a DB benefit, has got other large benefits? May or may not be true, but I'm paraphrasing. So for the young, why do they want to pay for something that they may well not get themselves, or certainly payable when they get to that age? Flip side of that, individuals that are in retirement now will say, I've earned that benefit, I've been promised that benefit, and it's not my fault how it's funded.
Can't remove that now, but that's the debate, isn't it? Is the triple lock a benefit, or is it a is it something that you've earned, or is it just an added bonus on top? Because when Jeremy Hunt introduced it, it wasn't meant to last this long.
Yes. So moving from a triple lock to a double lock is probably more likely. Don't have an underpin linked to some sort of level.
Which one do you remove?
I don't know. Whether it's an inflation or a national average earnings, it feels that it needs to be an inflationary measure in some format rather than a guaranteed level of increase.
Yeah.
So I think a movement, it makes more economic sense nowadays. There's also something else to bring in as well.
Would you scrap it?
I think it needs to change to be affordable. So would I scrap it? I would change it.
Yeah. To that double lock or to something else?
Something like a double lock. Fiscally, I would need to see the impact of which, and I'll explain why I need to see the impact of which. Yeah. So state pension age and triple lock are manifesto pledges. We've had that for at least the last couple of terms. We also see a pledge on migration and or immigration, if I'm able to use that. So in the UK, the population changes over the next decade is really purely around migration levels. So the number of the workforce remains static unless there's migration. So if you've got two policies, one says I'm going to keep this triple lock and the state pension the way it is, and the other says I'm going to have zero migration, those two things
run
do
out
not
of people who pay into the system.
So those two things over the next two decades do not add up unless there's other policy changes to increase the funding available to support both
but
of those.
At the moment, who would be the political party that stands up at the election and says we're scrapping the triple lock and we're opening the gates? I mean, you're going to not win, frankly.
But to be wise to an educated audience, that is the question that needs to be asked, and why we see political questions from your good self say which one of these pledges are you actually keeping to? Are you keeping to the triple lock, and for how long, or are you keeping to a migration pledge?
Yeah, and what would be your answer?
There's a lot of U-turns, aren't there? you can't have both without looking through the dial of migration. We need it. It's important to have it. To have a good social policy around that is very important. It's equally important to maintain dignity and affordability in retirement. So we need to have a state pension system that's adequate, that's payable from an age that the country can afford, and it needs to be increased in line with inflation. Quite a lot of the population due to retire in the 2030s, that's over 50, 60%, are reliant on a state pension. Therefore, state pension that does not increase by some level of inflation means they will fall into pensioner poverty.
That on that generation then that are set to retire in the next decade or the decade after this one, they're referred to as Generation X in the report. Why are they such a outlier, and why are there so many issues with their generation? Is it because they're sort of caught between two systems?
They are. So there's the DB system, the defined benefit, the final salary system. Generally those fell by the wayside in the 90s, let's say.
Yeah.
So there's a period between 1990 and 2012 when automatic enrolment came in. So there's quite a period there of 20-ish years where individuals in a workforce that are retiring, that Gen X, have not built up a benefit unless they chose to go into a pension scheme. So effectively half of a working life where somebody hasn't got a private pension, they might have saved into the state pension. So there's a heavy reliance on state with less reliance on their own private pension. So that is a problem.
And I mean, the report here is trying to answer that problem. Is it able to, or is it too late for that sort of cohort, that age group? I mean, what can be, Torsten Bell, for instance, said last year, I think, that they're not going to be able to deal with employer contribution rates in this parliament. If they can't do that, then what's the answer? You can't increase the state pension by more than they already do.
Yep. So how do you deal with that? It's proactive engagement with individuals. So is it too late? Let me answer that one. Somebody in their 50s right now who might have not saved at all, it's not too late to start saving. The tax incentivization for pension savings is a good reason to save for the future. In some behavioural reasons, it makes absolute sense to do that because you're going to get that money sooner, but it's the most tax efficient way to save for that nearer term future. So it's not too late. Can the government do anything about it to incentivise those, we're talking about those late 40s, 50s? As you've answered, the findings are no, we're not due to increase automatic enrolment contributions. So it must be down to the individual to take ownership and to understand and to engage. That's really difficult within the UK. We're not a population that is thinking, I've got a defined contribution scheme and I need to be aware of what I need.
well, in the report, they reference this, but they also say that there needs to be a system that doesn't rely on people being engaged. That's sort of me paraphrasing a bit. What's your view on that section?
I agree with you, but if we're not going to do anything as a nation for 5 years to implement anything, that's really difficult.
What do you mean by that? Sorry.
So if you were to implement something that engaged a population and through tax return each year, or an annualized return that required somebody to engage with their pension,
yeah,
then you could create an engagement, an interaction. I love pension awareness. It's a day. We try and get more people engaged and looking at their pension benefit, but it's a voluntary system. If you can change that to a mandatory system, such as in Australia, where you're doing tax returns and completing something on an annual basis, self-employed people do it already, but we're seeing low engagement through self-employed. Whether they can afford or not is a different matter.
Mm.
So you need to do either mandate, educate.
I was speaking to somebody yesterday, I believe it was, and they suggested that the UK should move to a system where it's compulsory to save into a pension. Thoughts?
We're virtually there, in a way, for sectors of the population.
But there are people who, when given the option, as they are when they pass probation or whatever, they don't.
Yes, and that could be by age, that could be by salary levels. The 2017 reforms, this is a gift for Thorsten to consider. The 2017 reforms about broadening automatic enrolment for full inclusion of a working population from £1 has been around for nearly a decade. We don't need to wait till spring 2027 or later. Could that be implemented? I know there would be cost to individuals, I know there'd be cost to employers, but it was already up, running and ready, and improves adequacy for areas of the population not covered. So could something be done right now, even within the confines of automatic enrolment, to allow more inclusion? Does that bring in self-employed or the others into that? There's a question of how you engage self-employed individuals.
On the self-employed element, that was a big part of the report. They obviously have been included since automatic enrolment. Is that just a case of people squirreling the money away for a rainy day in the near future, or what is the answer for them? Because that is a grave issue. I mean, it's less than 30% of self-employed do, I think.
You're absolutely right. So people who are self-employed are not saving enough for their retirement. There's due reasons for that. They're running businesses, they can't afford to do so. They may be thinking this is a lower priority in their economic needs. They probably engage with their accountants, advisors, and otherwise on an annual basis, who suggest you could get tax incentivisation for opening up a pension scheme. Behaviourally, individuals might well think, I'm quite a way off, so I don't need to save. All of those factors need to come in. Can you mandate a self-employed individual to save? Or do we need to consider what there is additional to a state pension? I'm not saying a national insurance contribution, but why, by way of, if you're self-employed, need to alleviate a little bit of the pressure of the state pension for those individuals by enabling them to save more.
Yeah. What's the answer with them then? I mean, is the state, the lack of self-employed representation within the pension companies, or indeed the government, is perhaps the issue there? I mean, this has been an issue that has existed for 10 years and it's not been known.
Yeah. A phrase, you know, we've looked the other way, haven't we?
Yeah.
Basically in terms of self-employed, having a mechanism that self-employed can be engaged automatically enrolled annually via their tax return or status might be quite useful, and to engage them around that time of year, and to equally engage them around their budget planning and otherwise would be useful. And having provisions, so whether it's a standard life through to any of the great firms out there in the UK, having the ability to join them.
What have Standard Life done to try and engage self-employed?
It's really difficult for us to engage them. We have self-invested personal pensions, advised, non-advised. Those are the products that are available. In terms of...
Do you have any strategies to specifically target them?
We reach out through our advisors, retail networks and otherwise. Obviously, we would like to give a better retirement for all customers or potential customers within the UK. So it's about that engagement level. Yeah. What we can't do is force people. We can highlight the benefits highlight the taxation benefits the same as everyone else and have mechanisms to do it. We do that in the contract-based provisions, whether that's retail or otherwise. Within the trust-based provisions, master trust, there's not a provision to enable people to go.
You can't strong-arm them into doing anything.
It cannot get them into.
Yet. And if you were in charge, what would you, beyond engagement, how would you deal with the self-employed issue? Because, I mean, having like a side hustle or entrepreneurial spirit, that's all stuff that with the advent of AI is going to become more and more prevalent. And if you have a situation where in 30 years time where you're getting to a and not enough people have money for retirement, then you do have a big issue on your hands, social and economic.
Yeah, so there's the state concern. Do individuals that are self-employed need to pay more to the state and build up more state benefit effectively?
Yeah.
One. Two, is there, as I say, by way of accounting return annually, is the questions there of how could you be more efficient in your tax and your savings needs? And that's twofold as well. There's immediate and short-term savings, which the interim report also gave. We need to consider what in the emergency savings look like. Need to make sure that people have cash for saving for the near term and have cash for or saving needs for the longer term as well. So consider both of those at the same. For a self-employed individual, it's exactly the same point. What do they need to save for a near-term period? What do they need to save for a long-term period? And by accounting returns, advice, guidance, assisting them in those decisions, not just at the point of taxation return, but maybe just after the tax return. Advisors are probably engaging their clients right now to say, well, into a new tax year, what do you need for the business? What are your short-term personal savings? And what are long-term retirement benefits? So there's two concerns. One's a private and one's a public concern.
You spend a lot of time in Australia and dealing with the sort of, the figures from the Australian pension system. How do they deal with the self-employed issue? Do they have the same issues?
Less of an issue.
Why?
Probably a little bit more engagement.
Is it compulsory to save into pension there?
Only if you're employed.
Okay.
So it's 12% from your employer as at July last year. If you're self-employed, it's again your decision. Are the mechanisms to engage? Is the greater advertising by supers there? Yes. There's also greater engagement around taxation returns and the frequency of taxation returns that raises the issue. How are you saving for your retirement? Also, they have a means-tested
state pension.
State pension, which is a big difference within the UK.
Yeah. Would you, going back to the state pension, then would you support a means-tested state pension? Do you think that's something we should consider?
We will always consider that. Do I think it's right? Right. So my personal belief is, I think everyone's bought into a promise that they're saving for something from the state that is payable. So it would be very difficult to remove it.
Because of the national insurance contributions, yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps to kind of move towards wrapping this up then, Mike, the next stage of the report, they said they'll deal with the remedies to the situation. What are you expecting from that and what might you be feeding back to the commission itself?
First of all, great report. Real experts looking at it, agreeing wholeheartedly across the industry. The thing is, could we get a bit of pace around the changes? We have known... areas of society, areas of our population are not included with adequacy and saving or targeting what saving is. Could we do something earlier than later to support adequacy, education and inclusion?
Yeah. And what if the government, the criticism that is often levelled at governments about these reports, perhaps particularly this one, considering how many consultations they have out, is that they get all this information fed back to them. It's an external body external figures that are doing it. And then it sits in an in-tray for 4 years and then the next government comes in. How do they avoid that issue? Because this is something that it materially matters.
So I do believe the pensions minister is doing a great job in terms of trying to push and direct not only how we're invested, productively working in line with Treasury. I don't believe he or the government will sit on something. However, if they do, that is a mistake. And how long the findings take to come into action. If it is the next term of government, then does that mean it will just be lost?
Yeah.
So
every day is a...
Every day is the missed opportunity. As I raised there before, we've had changes to automatic enrolment, which would have enabled inclusion for about the last 9 years. A lot of the interim findings are not new news to experts and have been spoken about for a period of time. We need to move quicker on that adequacy, move quicker to inclusion, move quicker. So leaving it. Also, the time bomb that we've spoken about for 20 to 30 years is coming, and it's going to come more. So what's going to give? State pension, is that going to go later and lower income replacement? Are we going to remove that triple lock on a pension?
Better not me.
So all of those points are coming nearer and nearer. The more that we defer any change, the more the problem will be for the UK.
And when you say time bomb, can you define that?
Mid-2040s, over 50% of the population will be in pensioner poverty. So we don't have much time to sit. And if you take, you know...
It's only 20 years away now, isn't it?
Exactly that. I mean, look at the US model. The US model, the Trump administration, the Department of Labor, have come in with its versions of automatic inclusion, automatic enrolment, and incentivizing saving within the US. I don't feel a Trump administration would do something that is for the next administration, for the next administration, for the next administration. So it's a power where the UK acts fast, strongly governed, strongly maintained, and has great opportunity to take that opportunity, drive productive growth, as well as drive adequacy for a driven and growth successful championing population.
Well, Mike Amery, thank you very much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Julian.
Thank you.
But today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.